Earth explorers, welcome to X Squared Radio, where the past meets the future. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. In here, the results are always positive. We explore the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. Whether you are driving across the country tonight, or listening on the web while you're working on your favorite project, you are about to learn more about who we are, why we are here, and what we may become than you thought possible. We might go a little past your imagination, but have no fear. You will be safely traveling with us. Keep your arms inside the vehicle, recline your chair, and look out the window as we launch X Squared Radio. We are so happy to have you here with us tonight on X Squared Radio. We're glad you're tuning in and getting squared. The solar wind is up to a mere 330.6 kilometers per second. It is a strange mindset when scientists are hoping for a large sunspot. Sunspot 1029 was very large as it headed over the western limb yesterday, but has returned from the far side of the sun, and it is not impressive. All that remains of the former behemoth is a bright magnetic froth. Readers with solar telescopes should target the northeastern limb of the sun to see a sunspot corpse. The solar wind has been so low for so long that the galactic wind is now making headway against the heliosphere. We really are in a new neighborhood now. There were only 13 earthquakes greater than 2.5 in the last 24 hours. It's kind of a very low number. Only three were greater than 5.0. Perhaps the inner Earth is sleeping. The discovery came from NASA's moon bombing mission. The Lunar Crater Observation and Sensing Satellite, LCROSS, probe, which was deliberately crashed into the lunar south pole last month. An analysis of the dust thrown up from the impact revealed the presence of about 80 liters of water, or enough for a shallow bath. The results suggest that much larger, more accessible reserves are available at the poles. Quote, we can announce that we found water, not just a little bit, a significant amount, close quote, said Tony Colapret, principal investigator for the mission at NASA's Ames Research Center in California. The discovery comes at a good time for NASA scientists who are waiting for a White House decision on the future funding for lunar exploration, expected to be announced in January. I would say that should have some pretty interesting debates about that. If there is water on the moon and there is ample H3 reserves on the moon, then you have all the raw materials you need to support life. Now, not life on the surface as we know it, but life inside an artificial environment, and that might be a good place to begin. Back in the 70s, it was often said that he who controls the moon controls the Earth. And then, all of a sudden, with two completely paid-for launch engines sitting on the pad, the program ended. The White House has not dropped plans for an aggressive global warming bill early next year that will be loaded with new spending on green technology and jobs that would be paid for with tax increases. Democratic lobbyist Steve Elmendorf said the White House focus on deficit reduction could easily kill the cap and trade effort. Those of you that don't know what cap and trade is, that is a voluminous bill that covers the trading of carbon credits, and it covers the creation of that currency so that companies that are very efficient and generate a surplus of carbon credits can actually trade them to companies who do not have very good track records environmentally. And thus, you sort of create a new currency. Quote, I think this means cap and trade has to go to the back burner, said Elmendorf. This bill would have provided $20 billion for electric vehicles. And I must say, without additional funding targeted to the electric vehicle industry, there will likely be only a few vehicles hit the streets in the next 5 years. NASA is about to begin transmitting commands to its Mars rover Spirit as part of an escape plan to free the venerable robot from a Martian sand trap. Officials say there is little hope of freeing Spirit, with the best case scenario of severe wheel slippage and barely detectable forward progress. On the bright side, Spirit is stuck in a very interesting spot. Oh, I'd like to hear more about that. Aaron Regent, president of the Canadian gold giant, said that global output has been falling by roughly 1 million ounces a year since the start of the decade. Total mine supply has dropped by 10% as ore quality erodes, implying that the roaring bull market of the last 8 years may have further to run. Ore grades have fallen from around 20 grams per ton in 1950 to nearer 3 grams in the U.S., Canada, and Australia. South Africa's output was halved since peaking in 1970. I don't know if you know what this means. Of course, besides the planet being less attractive to Anunnaki, it reduces the amount of precious metal available in the world, which means all those wonderful gold commercials that you hear on AM radio, in advising you to invest in gold, advising you to take advantage of the rising price of gold because it's becoming more and more valuable. Actually, that's not really true. And I want to implore, at least make you understand that when you buy that gold bullion, you're not taking delivery of the gold. You're not actually getting the metal in your hands. What you're getting is a certificate that says you own gold. But where the gold sits and whether you could put your hands on it and stick it in a can in your own backyard remains to be seen. The other thing is that the actual value of gold never changes. Gold buys the same amount today as it bought 150 years ago. It's the dollar that changes in value. And that is another interesting story altogether. We may talk a little bit about it tonight because our subject material tonight is 2012. I'm going to approach it from a little different standpoint tonight because this week the new movie 2012 hit the theaters and some of you have seen it. So what I want to do tonight is sort of get your review of the movie and how you felt and what questions came to your mind. The phone lines will be open all night. Toll free 888-228-4494. That's 888-228-4494. And if you don't have access to toll free, don't worry. We've got a number for you, 530-776-5154. 530-776-5154. We'll be back in 40 seconds. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, and this is X Squared Radio. In ancient times, the Mayans seem to have recorded and etched in stone a very accurate calendar designed by the Soul King Wheels and put together in an elaborate system of dating. They bring us the predictions that we're coming to the end of an age. The end of the age of Pisces, the beginning of the age of Aquarius. And there's some interesting prophecies that go with this. Tonight we have open lines all 3 hours. No interviewee tonight except for you. You are the interviewee tonight. You have a chance to speak about anything that you want to speak about on X Squared Radio. We like to receive phone calls. So sometimes we have a guest, as we did last week. We had the author of an amazing book, and we also had his co-author on. And I got to tell you, it was a very, very fascinating, fascinating interview. And I have to say that it got a little deep. We got more into the scientific information than we normally do. It was called Cosmic Conversations, several interviews with several of the leading scientists about consciousness and its involvement in the creation and manipulation of matter and even energy itself. Excellent interview. If you want to go back and listen to it, go to the archives at xsquaredradio.com. Click on the archives, and if you're not a member, it's easy to subscribe. It's only $2.50. If you want to listen to everything, you can listen to in 30 days. And it's only $20 a year. That's less than the price of a cup of coffee per month. And there are over 500 hours of interviews with some of the best authorities in the world. If you want to know who they are, when they were on, what we talked about, you can click on the Guests tab at X Squared Radio. And they are listed by year from 2005 all the way till now. And you can find your favorite expert, whether it's Dr. Richard Bartlett or Dr. Bruce Lipton, or even some of the more speculative sciences out there. Everything from psychoanalysis and hypnosis and past life regression to space research and alien visitations. The very highest level of discussions going on. And it's easy to access. So for our first hour's question, I want to know, who has seen the new movie 2012 and what your thoughts are after seeing the movie. Now, those of you that saw The Day After Tomorrow, same director, lots of panoramic special effects and seas leaving their bounds and buildings falling over and airplanes narrowly missing, debris flying at all different angles. And I haven't seen the movie myself, so I don't care if you tell me the ending, because we kind of wrote 3 books on it, so we understand the hysteria with which the movie made license. And we want to know, were you entertained? Did you learn anything about the possible future of our planet? Did you learn anything about yourself? You know, there have been many prognosticators who recorded things about the future. I understand the director of that movie, to prepare himself, or at least begin his storyboard for his movie, he simply did the same thing you do. He logged onto the internet, went to Google or Yahoo, and put in 2012. What's going on out there? What's going to happen? Well, needless to say, he probably got more links than he could probably follow in a lifetime, somewhere around, I don't know, 10 or 20 million. I haven't done it myself. But there are certainly many fine works written and many fine documentaries done and many great speculations out there. But there are some that are notable, and Edgar Cayce is one of those. When asked what the New Age means to humanity, Edgar Cayce replied, quote, "The full consciousness of the ability to communicate with the creative forces and be aware of the relationships to the creative forces and the uses of same in material environs. This awareness during the era or age in the age of Atlantis and Lemuria or Mu brought what? Destruction to man and his beginning of the needs of the journey up through that of selfishness. Close quote. Now, we could get a lot out of that. We could parse it word by word. We could try to interpret what Edgar Cayce meant, but that isn't really the thrust of what we want to accomplish tonight. Now, let's see if we can discuss this just a little in detail, and see if we can light a fire here and get the phones going. The phone number, toll-free, is 888-228-4494. Anywhere else on planet or off planet, you can reach us at 530-776-5154. We are discussing the movie 2012. What effect it had on you? Why did you go see it? Were you entertained? Were you amazed? Were you motivated to go down to the local food supply place and stock up? Just want to see. Once we move away from printed material and we move away from History Channel and Discovery Channel documentaries and different animated things, and we start moving into feature films, we start moving into the genre of great cinematic speculation, shall I call it, more people will sit down and watch it. More people will buy the popcorn, sit in the dark, and jump at the proper moments. But if we look at what Edgar Cayce is saying in detail, we are talking about the full consciousness of the ability to communicate with the creative forces. That's basically what he's saying first. Now, let me say that I don't think he meant that we would meet the aliens that spliced our DNA. I don't think he was talking about that. I think he wasn't even talking about a single God in heaven somewhere. But I want your thoughts on this. I want to know what you are thinking when you think about 2012, when you think about, gee, we're here in November of 2009. That puts us, 3 years and 1 month and 6 days away from December 21st, 2012. That's the end of the Mayan calendar. Now, it's just interesting that this is not like Y2K. This is not like some fundamentalist preacher saying, the world is going to end. Get your food together and take yourself and get ye to the wilderness. No, it isn't like that at all. What we're talking about are very fine, very technical, very carefully calculated records left in stone, left in gold, left in metal plates, left in codexes, and different artifacts around the world that say, not to their generation, to our generation, wake up, people. Don't get distracted. Keep looking to the stars and take care of the race. The full consciousness of the ability to communicate with the creative forces. That's interesting. You know, the validation of a seer is whether what he predicts comes true or not. I think Edgar Cayce had a higher ability than most seem to be able to manifest. Now, there really is nothing impossible about what he could do. Most of us can do this, but also most of us don't have the skill to describe it, nor a scribe sitting at our bedside recording that flow of information. I think many of you are getting downloads of one kind or another. Your minds are being opened. Your hearts are being touched. You're having dreams. You're having visions. You're having information come out in your writing, information come out in your art. Concern, maybe, or is it curiosity, or is it the kind of thing that helps you change the course of your life, or treat your children, or value every moment with those with whom you have love? It's interesting. Most people that I meet feel a sense of urgency. They feel that there really isn't much time to get the things done that they want to do. And some of them are actually taking time to smell the roses because they realize that all work now, if something does happen to change the amount of, quote, leisure time that we might have later in our lives. And it may not be available if that leisure time goes away or gets changed into what is supposed to be more productive time. Then they're kind of, they feel gypped, like, wait a minute, I worked toward retirement and retirement didn't come. I worked and put all my money in the bank and the banks failed. I worked and built my house and it's beautiful on the beach and a great wave wiped it out. You know, there is this sense that we have to hurry up, that we've got to hurry up and get our life's purpose underway. In fact, if you talk to a lot of young people today, children today, teenagers today, not only will you be surprised at the intellect and their awareness and their awakenedness about the purpose of life and even the purpose of death, an understanding beyond their years, a wisdom, a correlation between the future and the past that past generations simply did not have. When you see that, when you witness that, when you interview young people, and not just one, thousands, maybe all of them, what you begin to realize is that something might be actually true about this 2012 thing. So if you saw the movie 2012, and I suspect there are a few of you out there, you might even be at the theater right now, and you're going to be wanting to call in, except that now you're at your workstation, crunching away numbers in some spreadsheet or drawing blueprints on some map somewhere or some building prints, then you can't call in because this is an archive. Hello, this is your recording. But if you're live, you've got a rare opportunity to take place, to participate in this speculation and the thought process of those thousands and thousands of people over the next week that will sit down and listen to this program. So if you've got a message, if you've got an epiphany, if you've got some revelation that came to you while you were watching this movie or thinking about going to the movie or just thinking about 2012, and you haven't had a chance to call in to the talk radio programs and you haven't been in Oprah's audience, then now's your chance. The phone number is 888-228-4494. And if you've got free nights and weekends on that cell phone, if you're within radio shot of a cell phone tower or you don't have access to toll free, here's the number: 530-776-5154. I think that it can be said that consciousness is higher now than it was, say, 50 years ago. Now, I do think we had a peak, a real serious peak in the late 1800s and early 1900s. I mean, the world's fairs, the industrial revolution, the great thinkers and writers, and we had great progress in philosophy and in even working as a society, as we began to realize that we could divide up our efforts and specialize in various things. We could build cars for a living. We could sew clothes for a living. We could plant crops for a living. We could even brew alcohol for a living. And that living could be converted into cash, and the cash would allow us to convert that into other things such as sugar and shoes and automobiles, that we did not have to spend our entire day milking cows or hoeing fields or harvesting crops and grinding grain to bake bread for the evening meal. Somebody else did that for us. We could go spend 7 cents on a loaf of bread, and we could eat for days on just a little bit of money. Money became the commerce, and commerce was driven by industry, and industry segregated itself out. Everything from paper to potato chips, from shoes to airplanes, everything became specialized. People realized that I only have to put in 8, 10, maybe 12 hours a day, and the rest of the time, including the weekend, is mine. But in doing that, it gave them the leisure to read. It gave them the leisure to go to lectures, to go to school. And there was a great renaissance of knowledge. And whether you're talking about Ralph Waldo Emerson or you're talking about Nikola Tesla or Mark Twain, the great minds and the great thinking and the great doings of man became published far and wide, and there was an explosion in consciousness. But alas, somewhere in the 60s, we began to fall asleep again as a nation or even a planet. But now, with the beings who are coming of age at this time, in the evolution of mankind, my observation is that most people are increasing in awareness, just as Edgar Cayce predicted. And I mean that awareness is enlightening and lighting up and coming alive in the last 3 years. In the last 3 years. Now, many of you, you might be my age, you might be a little bit younger, and you might be a little bit older. Did I get everybody in that group? What happens is that you realize that there's so much to life, and you want to grasp it all, and your mind begins to expand. And we'll see how that's going with the callers. We have you on line one. Welcome to the program.
Winter solstice is of any significance rather than the Venus conjunction on June 6th, 2012, at 1:28 Universal Time. That seems to me like it'd be more of a significant event to the Mayans, but for the life of me, I don't understand where the winter solstice comes into this. So. If you can shed any light on that, I'd be very grateful.
Sure, sure. Michio Kaku was on Fox News yesterday, and he said an interesting thing. He said, look, Jupiter is going to be on the other side of the planet, and all the planets are going to be lined up, and that's the, you know, during the winter solstice, which is December 21st, what's going to happen is all the planets are going to be on one side along with the Milky Way rift, and the sun is going to be on the other side, and great and terrible things are going to happen. And Michio Kaku said, you know, this alignment happens every 100 years or so. Jupiter lines up on the other side and all the planets line up and blah, blah, blah. He said, and we don't have any cataclysms. And then he said something very strange. He said the Earth lines up with the rift in the Milky Way about every 100 years. And Jupiter lines up like this about every year. And nothing happens. So he was referring to the movie 2012, and he said, you know, the entertainment was great, but the science is bad. And I thought to myself, Michio, what are you doing? What about the precession? What about the solar system being in a place only once every 26,000 years? What about the galaxy revolving around other galaxies in a supercluster of galaxies? What about that neighborhood? And he didn't mention it on Fox News. And I thought to myself, well, he probably only had 3 minutes. You know, let's do a quick 2012 update. But I asked myself, why? Why did he toe the government line? Why didn't he leave it open? That's a good question.
Well, what I'm getting at is, you know, it's a 7 or 8 year duplex type event. You know, this the Venus solar conjunction. And, you know, it retrogrades 2 degrees every conjunction. So it's a big, long cycle, and traces out a pentagram, you know, from the perspective of the Earth, of observing here. But, it just seems like, something to, be noteworthy rather than a winter solstice, for crying out loud. It just seems so, consequential to me, but,
it sounds rather astrological, doesn't it?
Pardon me?
It sounds astrological, doesn't it? Like, well, the stars are lining up in a certain way, and so your moon is in this, and your sun is in this, and you're in Aries, you're in Cancer. It sounds astrological instead of cosmological.
Well, right. Well, I'm not right. Astrological is absurd. I don't know why anyone would bite that, but anyhow, just trying to get a grasp of it. I didn't see 2012, and I have no intent to do so. But enjoy your show, and thanks for
All right. Well, I appreciate it. I may see it just for the entertainment value, even though I, you know, participated in a couple of books on it. I appreciate the call, Ramon. We have Gary on the line. Gary, are you still there? All right. Is it Gary or is it Ramon? Ramon, there you are.
I'm here.
Okay.
How's it going back there?
We had both callers on at the same time, and that's amazing. I love internet radio. It's so much fun. How's it going in New York?
It's pretty good. Weather is pretty warm today. It's not raining anymore.
Well, that's great. Yeah, the skies are clear tonight. I looked up and saw Venus blaring in the southwest, and thought, gee, that's such an amazing sight. Venus, or Jupiter, has just been spectacular this year. You can't hardly take your eyes off of it. It's so amazing.
Yeah, it's like I've always said, I can see like maybe 6-7 stars, but Jupiter is always the brightest. Of course, excluding the moon, but it's always the brightest in the sky.
Well, I imagine you've got a fair amount of light pollution there in the Big Apple.
Just a little bit.
So yeah. Did you see the movie 2012?
No, I didn't see the movie 2012, but I was calling in to comment about the whole thing with Edgar Casey, and I guess basically saying people just turning on to the whole, I guess there's different ways of saying it, the whole God conscious or Christ conscious. And I just want to relate like a quick story that had happened to me on, what was that, Friday night. I do a lot of freelancing work, and now during Christmas, we'll do decorations to people's houses and restaurants and stuff like that. So we were doing one for a house in Long Island. And to make a long story short, we had brought a pot, but the pot was a plastic pot, and it was kind of bubbled out and cracked. And I've read a book called Matrix Energetic, and I've been, you know, trying it out and stuff like that. So it's raining, we're hanging up lights, and, you know, water and electricity don't really mix well. So I'm just like, so I try it out, and nothing happens. But 15 minutes later, the pot that had the plant in it that was bubbled out and kind of cracked with dirt coming out of it from the bottom, it was perfectly fine. So I asked my boss, I said, oh, you changed the pot. He goes, no, I didn't change the pot. We only brought enough for all the trees we have. And we turned it around, and there's no holes. Perfectly fine in it. And he's Pentecostal Christian, so he just freaks out. And the whole entire day we were arguing about, miracles.
What did you
and
do,
stuff
Ramon?
Like that. Whatever I guess I did or something did, because I'm flabbergasted myself, and the only reason why I believe is because I witnessed it. And
wow.
He was just like, he didn't know which way to go. Was it a God miracle or the devil was messing with him?
Yeah, I know. I'm just laughing because it's humorous, you know. One thing we realize that if a human is aware of full consciousness and the ability to communicate with these creative forces, like through Matrix Energetics. By the way, if you get a chance to read that book, Dr. Richard Bartlett is just an amazing personality, and he really has brought something to the science there. I would highly recommend that. Anyway, that denotes that there's a two-way exchange of knowledge. I mean, the pot didn't fix itself. It was something that Ramon participated in, and there was an energy exchange. That is something that fundamentalists who are more used to one-way communication coming from some entity out there, some call it God, some call it Allah, Buddha, karma, whatever, great spirit, they're not used to sending things back the other way. And you got to realize from a physics standpoint, you are exchanging information with this creative force. Edgar Cayce calls it creative forces.
When I was doing it, I was just focusing on the rain, but I was trying to look at reality itself in its true nature, which is lights and photons, and trying to look at everything around me. So, to my best understanding, it was, you know, the funny thing is that after I did that, I felt like, have you ever been either meditating or just like relaxing, and all of a sudden you feel like for a split second that reality becomes like a liquid, like you feel like a wave, and then it's gone, and you kind of go to yourself, whoa, what was that?
Right,
I kind of felt that twice. So that's why my only conclusion was that I did it. But even though I've always believed that this is possible, it's still shocking, and I've had experiences where I don't know if people were listening before when I tell the story of slowing down the rain and stuff like that. And every time it happens, it's still shocking, like the first time.
Well,
so
I think it's amazing.
It's an amazing time. So as far as 2012, my suggestion is, if we're so powerful to do these things and a calamity is supposed to stop by, then we can stop it. We can change it. Like you've always said, we have the power to change things. It's the problem that we feel inferior, that it's up to something else or somebody else to do these changes always, or the government, or God wants it this way, or, you know, and we don't take responsibility and say, no, I'm going to change it.
Yeah. It's like in the movie Next, when Nicolas Cage is narrating the movie. He says the future changes just because you looked at it.
Exactly.
Interesting stuff. All right, Ramon, I really appreciate the call. They're stacking up on me, so I'm going to get to them.
All right.
Keep up the good work. Fix the rest of the flower pots in New York. Good night, my friend. Bob from Arkansas, you're on the program. Welcome.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Agnew. It is a pleasure to speak to you.
Oh,
I wanted to point something out there's a lot of things, of course, we can point out. But with all this hoopla at 2012, which, you know, I spend a lot of time throughout the last 5 or 6 years reading up on this and all the other esoteric stuff that, you know, goes around with it. And what I noticed with CNN and Fox and ABC and, you know, all of them, is they're focusing on the cataclysms and all, which may very well be. You know, I'm ready for any of it. But what they neglect to share with us is the return of the god or gods. You know, like the Mayan prophecy of the Quetzalcoatl. You know, I mean, I think that's one of the biggest things that stands out for me is that, hey, wow, somebody's coming back here, you know? And so they focus on the cataclysms and all, but I have not yet heard one of these news stations mention the return of one of the gods, you know, different names and different cultures.
I really like that observation. You know, Quetzalcoatl is a central figure in a lot of modern, I could call it religions, I can call it traditions. For instance, in the Mormons believe that Quetzalcoatl, the feathered serpent, was actually their depiction of the Christ when he appeared to them after he was resurrected. He was in the New World for about 6 weeks after he was resurrected, and then he left there. And he said, other sheep I have which are not of this fold, them also must I bring, and there will be one shepherd and one flock. And so he came to the Americas And it's unclear as to how long he stayed, but it's also clear that he had a very big impact, such that not only did they call him Quetzalcoatl, the white-bearded god, but they realized that he would return. And I guess that's why when Cortez showed up, he was treated, or at least welcomed the way that he was, until he showed his true colors. But maybe that was not the real event. Maybe Quetzalcoatl, maybe the Mayan pilots, maybe these other individuals, which if you go down to the Museum of Anthropology in Mexico City, I highly recommend, if you get a chance to go there, you should go. Because there are artifacts there that only exist there, nowhere else on the earth, and they're real. They were dug up, exhumed, as it were, and put on display there. And you will see very clearly, you will see ancient carvings of people that definitely look like they're sitting in some kind of pod with a joystick in their hands and wearing a helmet. So, you know, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about a regular visit during these pre-cataclysmic times to remind us to get our boots on? Is that what you think?
Well, you know, I've had the opportunity after many, many nights of sky watching where I've seen some things that I know I saw them, you know. But there was a process through this, Dr. Agnew, I've been at this about 9 years now. And after my first 3 years of, I started out biblically, and I still keep one foot in the Bible, but, you got to step out and feel the rest of the literature out there. And I came to the point after about 3 years that I had to take all the information that I grew up with and throw it basically right out the window and start over. And once I did that, some incredible things started happening. And it's still today, as it still goes on. And I never have a dull day around here. I think that there's a process.
There is, and I like the fact that you're keeping one foot in the Bible, because it's sort of like that anchor, like that one piece that just doesn't move. And although I must say, every time that you read the Bible, you get a slightly different message. It depends on the spirit with which you go after the knowledge in the Bible. I have to say, I've cracked open the book from time to time just for solace, or just to get my mind going from it. And I taught from it for many, many years and understand, probably more than the average person about that collection of writings. But what I find is that the things that are going on now, the brighter, more awake children that we see, and it's anthropologically proven now that their cortexes are up to 10% larger than their grandparents. Of course, my teenagers have been telling me this for years, but be that as it may, what it means is that the race is beginning to evolve. We're on the cusp of a major evolution here. And it also tells us that we do not have to necessarily march down the eschatological path to Armageddon. Really? I mean, don't the scriptures tell us that, guys, this is all in our hands, okay? The predictions that are in Revelations, that are in Ezekiel, that are in Isaiah, are conditional, are they not?
Right.
That means if you guys don't straighten up, this is what is going to happen. And by the way, if you do straighten up...
Yeah, I agree.
And I mean, didn't he tell the people, seriously, you can do what I do.
You know what, and when I turn the TV on, when I put the radio on, and I see, it seems to be like this last couple of months, there seems to be a continuing vampire thing, mixed in with our daily news of, children being kidnapped and killed, and, all this negative stuff. It seems to me that the power brokers here on the planet are really keeping all of the violence and the immoral, all of the nasty things in life in front of our face. and really is I can't figure out why they would want to do this, but I think it does have to do with this time period that we're coming into. I think they don't want anybody awakening.
Well, you know, Bob, what I see in that theme, I know we're talking about Moonlight. We're talking about the vampire program that it made it so big with what I call non-acting. This is really the deadpan, totally Botox-faced women that are these vampire chicks or vampire-loving chicks who are just avoiding the sun at all costs and sporting the dark circles under their eyes. But it's not the drinking of the blood. In fact, it's the avoidance of that gives the uniqueness to the program. But the main theme, I think the thing that's the most attractive to those who view it, is the theme of eternal life. It is kind of a fake. It's kind of a, I'm dead, but I'm living forever, okay? That and the extra power that comes with that immortality. That is the attraction to this. And the fact that you've got this dichotomy, you have this perfectly healthy, warm-blooded woman who is ostensibly risking her life hanging around with vampires. And then there is this quasi-sexual theme weaved through it, or woven through it, and that's what's attractive to it. And it's not that difficult to see once you review the product, but you are exactly right in what entertainment is being staged in front of us, what is being put on the schedule. And I don't care if you have 13 channels or 1,300 channels, Bob is exactly right. You're being fed a menu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's I feel at this point. I've stayed away from TV for about the last 4 or 5 years. But in the evening, when I lay down with the lady, she watches TV, of course. And I grab that remote control and I put Andy Griffith on. It's about the least offensive thing I can find on TV these days.
I like Andy Griffith. I mean, I like Goober, and I like Barney. I mean, I love the idea of a policeman who has one bullet and he's never used it, and yet he keeps the peace.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, I don't know what I do have the. I can feel it in the marrow of my bones, where I have a sense of anticipation of what's coming. And it really is, I think that's tied in with all this, getting back to the power brokers and throwing all this garbage in our face at every turn. I just can't figure out why they would do that. I mean, what's the motive at having us basically in the dark, and subject to destroying each other from the garbage that's put in our head? We see it every day on the TV. What's the point behind it? Why are they doing this? Is it really to eliminate the population? Or is there something else going on here that, maybe in the spirit realm or these beings, which I totally believe that there's an abundance of beings out there. And below our feet too, by the way. But I think that's a good question: is why are they doing this? Why are they throwing all this in our face and keeping it in our face, rather than promoting peace, and love and all that good stuff? Not to sound like a hippie or anything, but it sure seems like an easier way to go.
Well, it does, and there's always an argument. And I don't think it's made very effectively, and that is that, oh, look, this is entertainment. People want to see stuff blow up. They want to hear about the assassination. They want to hear about kidnappings. They want to hear about war and all that. You know what? We don't. We really don't. In fact, when the entertainment industry does a survey of theater receipts, these are actually really good because people pay to go to a theater, sit down, eat popcorn, drink Coke, eat a popcorn, get cheese dip on their favorite jacket to watch movies. And it is a great indicator on what sells and what doesn't. Do you know the R-rated movies are the lowest sellers? It's the PG and PG-13 movies that far outsell the R-rated movies. And R-rated movies these days are pretty rough. I mean, the language is rough. I have gone into movies that I thought were great, would have been a great action flick, and found myself compelled to walk out after 30 minutes because of the language.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't care if it's Will Smith and Martin Lawrence, or if it's, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm seeing a loose use of profanity in movies where none should be used. It doesn't add a single thing to the movie, and it's very offensive to most of us sitting there. At least it desensitizes us over time. And that's something that I think you're trying to avoid, Bob, by avoiding that kind of entertainment. And I find myself, more difficult to control my own temper and my own expressions when I'm heated or hot or angry, because I'm exposed more and more to that kind of language. When you're not exposed to it, you don't use it.
Agreed. Yeah, what was acceptable 30, 40 years ago? You know, as far as language and what have you, what was, actually being, put out on the TV programs versus today? Oh, boy, it's night and day, you know?
Oh, sure. 50 years ago, if a man and woman were laying on a bed together, one of them had to have their foot on the floor. Those were the requirements of television programming. Now, soap operas are soft porn. And it really sends a bad message. But, I'm really fascinated by the young people today. I honestly don't think I could be a high school teenager today. They lowered the age of puberty about 10 years ago. And that changed the interaction of human beings in high school. But my kids, my boys, my girls have done very, very well in that environment. They're all great, wholesome people. Peaceful and generous and compellingly compassionate. And I'm proud of them. And I think most young people are like that.
Yeah. And if not like that, they want to be like that. I think that it's this program that they're doing on us. But, getting back to what we're being bombarded with daily. And it's a good day to turn the TV off and leave it off. With the exception of football, pardon me.
Well, yeah, yes, that's really violence. It's real, but they're well padded and they're great athletes and they play for entertainment. They're competitive, and man, I loved playing competitive sports. To work together as a team toward a common goal. Wow, if we could figure out how to do that in business, we would be unstoppable. We would just be able to pull together as a team and. And the linemen wouldn't be jealous of the quarterback, and the ends wouldn't be jealous of the halfbacks, and we'd all work together toward the same goal. Wouldn't that be great?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Hey, I do have one more question for you. I know you've got other callers.
Sure.
Since your visit to Mount Adams, have you had any experiences since you've been home? Have they revealed themselves to you, or did you look up in the sky and know, hey, wow, there they are, right there. Have you had any interaction at all since the Mount Adams, which, by the way, is a great story, the way that you shared it with us. It was fantastic.
Well, the answer is yes, and I the thing about Mount Adams, to me, that area is kind of like Mount Sinai. I haven't been to Mount Sinai, but to me, that's one of the places on the earth that higher powers make a frequent entrance and exit into our realm. I've seen them through infrared glasses. I've seen them on digital cameras, and I've seen them with my naked eye. And I've also felt them with my heart. Now, I've been a Christian my whole life. I can tell you, somebody asked me one time, am I Christian? And I said, what's a Christian? And they said, oh, come on. I mean, everybody knows what a Christian is. I said, no, seriously, we're on talk radio. I want to know your definition of a Christian. And he said, well, that's somebody that believes in Christ. I said, no. That can't be it. It's got to be more than that, because even the devils, you know, believe in Christ, but they're not Christians. I mean, it's got to be more like you're like him, and therefore you are a Christian. You act like him. You treat people like him. You have compassion like him. He was a great teacher. He was the demonstrator that one person during one lifetime could ascend and return without having to be born as a baby again and forget who he was. He brought everything back with him in one lifetime. Now, that being said, I always considered that to be somewhat abstract. I considered that to be, you know, maybe even a story, a good one, and certainly inspirational. But what happened at Mount Adams convinced me that there is a connection between one's self and one's higher self, or beings that can download great amounts of information into you in a short amount of time and literally change you forever. Now, this is not a workshop high I'm talking about. Even people that have known me my entire life have been with me in all kinds of situations say that when I came away from the mountain, I changed. And you can see it in my writings. I go back through my lab notebooks and I see my handwriting has changed, my outlook has changed, my level of patience has changed, my mission on this earth changed. Instead of being, you know, a good contract engineer out there to help companies become more efficient, I went out on my own. I became dedicated to bringing clean energy and electric vehicles and clean burning fuels and generation to the planet. I had those thoughts when I was young, but I never did anything about them. It was like somebody did a transfusion on me and everything changed. Even the shape of my body changed. I dropped 30 pounds in 4 weeks, and I've never gained it back. I mean, it's really an amazing transformation. And yes, I have had other experiences. I can tell you that the veil is very, very thin, and it has a feel to it. It's not like rushing through water like you see on the Stargate. To me, it's more like a washboard. It's more like a series of very tight, dense planes, one after the other. And when I feel that coming on, there is like a hyper-awareness of energy and feelings and thoughts, and literally can see the past, the future, and the present all at one time. And that's the only way that I can describe my own personal experience. And I'm going to keep going back there and keep trying to help others see or have that experience, because it is amazing. And I think that's like unto the evolution that the race of man is undergoing as we speak.
Yeah. I've had similar experience, but mine was induced by a 40-day fast. And on the 39th day, my entire life has changed then. And, that effect that you were talking about. And the download of information, too. I have to agree with that, too, is things that I struggled with before, is I really don't struggle with. In fact, I don't even question at this point. It's just that I know. And so it's freed me to go and search in other areas. And, it's a great thing. I think biblically they call it being born again, you know, being born from the Spirit above. And I think that's exactly what happened to me. You know, I wanted it in my heart, not my mind. That's another thing that I've found in my experience of this last few years is that I still have to question my mind. I have to be on guard on my own mind. But my heart, oh, wow. Oh, it's always true. It's always true, and it doesn't lead me astray. It's the mind I have to watch, you know, personally myself. But, you know, I mean, I can have all the knowledge, but, you know, to practice is another thing entirely. And I've learned to listen to my heart through this whole thing. And, it's a great, great experience. And, you know, I get up in the morning and I give my thanks and I proceed throughout the day. And I tell you, I don't miss that early morning prayer, you know. It's a Thanksgiving. I celebrate Thanksgiving every morning I get up, you know, and the realization that there's more to things than what we've been taught, you know, and what's been thrown in our face throughout the years from kindergarten on, you know. It's been an amazing ride. I'm 49 now. And,
you're not even a third of the way through. Come on, Bob. Not even a third of the way through. Hang in there. I got to go. Got to take a break.
Okay, thank you,
Dr. For coming Agnew. Back.
You bet. Take care.
Thank you. All right, X Squared Radio listeners, I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. It's open lines tonight. I'm going to take a very quick break. I got Mark hanging on. We'll be right back. Don't go away.
Saying something about a queen. There were peasants singing and drummers drumming, and the archer split the tree. There was a fanfare blowing to the sun that was floating on the breeze. Looking Mother Nature on the run in the 21st century. Well, I was lying in a burned up basement with the full moon in my eyes. I was hoping for a replacement when the sun burst through the sky. There was a band playing in my head, and I felt like getting high. I was thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie. Thinking about what a friend had said. I was hoping it was a lie.
Well, I dreamed I saw the silver spaceship fly in the yellow haze of the sun. There were children crying and colors flying all around the chosen one.
All in a dream, all in a dream, the loading had begun. Flying Mother Nature's silver sea to a new home in the sun. Flying Mother Nature's silver sea to a new.
Welcome back to X Squared Radio. That's the Alice Band, by the way. If you want to listen to that stuff, go to garageband.com and look them up. Great a cappella stuff out there. We have a caller on the line, so I'm going to take a quick 40-second intro. We'll be back. 40 seconds. X Squared Radio. I'm your host, Brooks Agnew. Don't go away. Don't forget, this is the month that we express our thankfulness. Be thankful for who you are. Don't forget who you are. Realize you have great, great worth. And you're going to make a great contribution to this planet. I'm thankful that you're listening tonight. And I'm thankful that Mark is on the line from Albuquerque. Welcome to the program, Mark.
Wonderful to hear your voice and speak with you again.
Oh, my friend, I'm so glad that I could hear from you. I was just thinking about you the other day.
Well, yeah, I figured when you mentioned the opening of your heart was a good time for me to call. Right before the...
in fact, I was thinking about Mark. Mark is a good friend. His daughter's name is Mariah. And they were up at Matt Adams. Actually, he's been up there a couple times. And it really is an amazing place. It you know, when I first got there, my first time, James Gilliland is the gentleman teacher that runs that fine facility. He called it a sanctuary. And I thought, gee, maybe it's a sanctuary, you know, for the ETs. They know they can come there and nobody's going to shoot at them. And they're welcome there and they can come. And it actually took me about 3 days to figure out that the sanctuary was for us. So that we could come there and we could speak openly about the interface between beings and intelligences from other dimensions and other worlds and us without somebody saying we're crazy. And Mark was one of the great friends that I made the first time I was up there. And we really appreciate Mark and his genuineness and his ability to see a lot of things most of us don't see. In fact, he's helped me see my own ego out there in front of me, and I appreciate him.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you, and all your listeners appreciate you and all that you do, and your genuineness in seeking that which is there and trying to prove that it's there. And for many of us, me being one, I don't need any proof. There's the knowing. And the knowing is within the heart. It has nothing to do with the intellectualization of it. It's, you can feel it. You can feel the truth. And the truth isn't out there. The truth is in there. And it's always been in there for all of us. And if we accept our truth, don't doubt our truth, and live our truth, what beautiful, wonderful beings we are. That's my preaching for today.
I couldn't have said it any better. You know, I wonder sometimes if the flying I do in my dreams is as real as when I'm holding on to the handlebars of my Honda drifting through the mountains of eastern Kentucky. I think the feeling is very similar. One is a little bit more real on the hairs of my forearms, but that's about the only difference.
Well, yeah, and you don't have to push the handlebars to go where you want to. You just put yourself at a destination and you're on your way. There's a difference, too.
Well, I often tell people that when I get on the motorcycle and the back wheel clears the driveway, I'm already at my destination.
Right. Yeah.
When I'm dreaming and I'm flying, I'm not going from point A to point B. The point is to be flying.
It's the journey, not the destination, that's important.
Yeah, what was it? Was it Buddha that said, when you begin on a path, the first step you take places you at your destination?
Yeah, and it's the experience. The experience of the journey. And you know, you are, like you said, you are at your destination. And every moment that you have in this experience that we call life is your destination. And if you make it to the next moment, wow, you're doing very well. And if you're happy, you're doing excellent. And if you're smiling and making someone else happy, then you are a brother in Christ. As you were speaking of earlier.
I guess the idea is not to get through the moment, you know, like a fat kid loves cake. The idea is to savor the moment and enjoy the moment and don't rush your life to retirement and physical death. And, you know, when you're out there fretting about your kids playing cowboys and Indians in the living room, don't worry about that because that will pass. It will get quiet soon enough. Actually savor that moment. And remember that the great leaders, and I don't mean the great warriors, I mean the great leaders, enjoyed the sweet savor of children playing.
Yeah. Well, yes. I mean, and to become like a child once again, and not take for granted everything that's around you. And this is what one of the teachings is, to become as a child. And that's what it means, is don't take the moment for granted. And actually be here. Don't be in your past and going over what mistakes you made or worrying about the future and what may occur. Be right now, here, now. This is where it is. And like you said, savor it, experience it, be present. That's the basic word, is presence. To be present in the moment and be fully aware. And that's the basis of really living. Because then, whether, if you do it correctly, the next moment will take care of itself, and what happened doesn't matter anymore anyway, because it's gone. And it's, oh.
Yeah, that's a good little baboon in The Lion King, you know, saying, doesn't matter, it's in the past. What we started out talking about tonight was the movie 2012. I know it's a piece of entertainment put out by the same director that did The Day After Tomorrow, so I expect there to be liberal license with computer-generated graphics.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to know how the movie was affecting people, because, you know, when people hear about 2012 or they read about 2012 or they see a History Channel or Discovery Channel special on 2012, they go, eh, you know, whatever, I'll go down and get some food storage and move away from the beach. But when they see a feature film and they really are immersed in the experience, what effect does it have on them? What do they do in their regular life? That they say, you know, I punctuate my life with paychecks. I punctuate my life with family vacations to the same place every summer. Or maybe I'm just waiting to graduate, or I'm waiting to get that promotion, or I'm waiting to retire. What about now? What about what Mark is talking about? What about the moment in the hand? What are you doing with it? How has the idea of 2012 coming just 3 years, 6 days, 1 month away, how has that changed your focus and your sense of urgency and your appreciation for the moment that Mark is talking about?
Hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I haven't seen the film. I probably won't see it because it seems like it's a conglomeration of all that could possibly happen in one movie. As far as my understanding and feeling within is, it's not date specific. If something's going to happen, it's going to happen. For 2012, if we go back and look, the Gregorian calendar's off, so we're in it. It's now. It's, you know, we're experiencing it now. And what the experience is, it is a change, but it's a change of perspective. It's a change of, from fear, even though it's trying to be maintained. But many people are losing their fear and seeing through the illusion of what was creating fear. Some aren't, some are still very much immersed in it, but that's what it's about. This is, the end of the world isn't the end of the physical world, it's the end of a perception, of a reality that was never real because it was illusion, because it was created by others. My thing that I, when I speak with people, that are in a state of fear from all these different venues, whether it be the news or television, you know, other television shows or the movies, I say, okay, all of these things and all these things that you've read about on the internet, how much have you actually experienced in your being, in your life? How many of these have you actually experienced? And other than seeing possibly the chemtrails, there's very little that they can say. I've experienced that, so I know that's the way it is. That's this is truth. It's been fear generated. They'll look for things.
I've experienced an earthquake. I've experienced a fire. I've experienced a tornado.
Right.
I've experienced a car wreck, a motorcycle wreck. I was even in a plane incident not long ago, as a matter of fact, down in Memphis.
There you go.
I can say to myself, oh, gee, this is entertainment. And actually what they've done is they've Disneyized it for me. And now it's even more ethereal and more a figment of my imagination and a figment of good computer-generated graphics, by the way, than it was before. And so I have even less fear about it. But on the other hand, if this is going to happen, if it's an actual, not a prophecy, but a prediction, which is something completely different, that the Mayans somehow had some insight into. Either they had a time traveler come to them in a capsule with a helmet, and he got out and he said, I want you to make some stone edifices and get about it pretty quick, because these people in 2012 need a message from you left in stone. So they can wake up and figure out how to survive as a race. Or they had their own paranoia that overtook their society, so much so that they spent a significant portion of their gross national product to make these edifices very, very precisely and very, very extravagantly with respect to engineering and stone cutting and masonry for nothing. And that's the big question. That's what we're really holding our breath over.
Well, I'm breathing because that's a gift. That's the gift right there. Every breath you have is a gift. But I'm not holding my breath to see what's going to happen. I'm going to be completely aware of what's happening, and if I need to step out of the way of it, I will. If I am unable to, I'm not worried, simply because I understand that I'm a spiritual being having a physical experience. And so whether my physical body is destroyed doesn't matter, because, you know, the spirit continues.
Now, what about the idea that the human consciousness and many humans' consciousnesses are involved in and can even divert such cataclysms?
Right. Well, it can also cause it if so many are in fear of it occurring. If you want to go avoiding it, well, let's look at, could it cause it or bring it about by putting the intent, not consciously, but by fear, by putting it there and saying, oh, this might happen. This could happen. Well, if we are co-creators, it goes both ways, whether it's preventing or creating it. Do you agree with that?
Well, you know, now you're getting to the surveys that were taken short time after Katrina. It was like, do you think it was just another storm, or do you think it was karma or God spanking this area severely with Katrina? And they go back even to Malaysia and look at the tsunami that occurred and took out really one of the more seedy, notoriously abusive areas of the tourist world. And I got to tell you, overwhelmingly, the answers came back. It was just another storm, people. There's no karma. There's no supernatural force out there gathering up all of the evil things that are done in an area, and it results in some geological regurgitation that wipes out the infestation.
Right.
However, one can go back through history and see it happening over and over and over again, not the least of which is the sinking of the Spanish Armada in the English Channel.
Mm-hmm. at just the right time. So some things are like that and some things aren't. I mean, I myself know rather than believe that we are all part of the collective consciousness, which is the of all consciousness in the universe, which is what people would call it, God. This is what I don't believe it because I like James's thing of James Gilman's says that in the belief, there's a lie in the middle of every belief if you look how it's spelled, and because there's doubt. You leave room for doubt if you have a belief. If you know and accept it, then it's not a belief anymore. It's a knowing. And is it a vengeful thing? No. But it's kind of like this is what you perceive to be what is going to be, then there you go. That's what it's going to be.
Well, so you're pretty right because, you know, there's a difference that happens with belief. And I'm going to take that one step further and say faith.
Yes.
I talk to a lot of people who are faithful. They say, well, I have faith in God. I have faith this is going to happen. I have faith in that, faith in this. And I say, well, you know, what is faith? Well, faith is the knowledge of things which are unseen, which are true, and which we hope are there, you know, that kind of stuff. But, you know, it's sort of like theory and fact. You have a theory that something is, and so you develop an experiment, and you test the theory, and the theory turns out to be pretty sound enough to call it a fact. Well, now you've got something quite a bit different. Now you don't have a helium balloon. Now you have a brick. And you can stand upon the brick, and you can build a house with the bricks, and you can build a skyscraper with the bricks, you can build a ziggurat with the bricks, and you can reach higher and higher, and the brick will never let you down. Because it's a fact. Because it is knowledge. Now you are standing upon the foundation of knowledge and exercising your faith to reach a little bit further. Now, I don't want you to get paranoid about the fact that knowledge is doing away with faith, because that's a little bit like age doing away with puberty. It is not the end of anything. You are not losing your faith. You should be using your faith and extending your faith to go out beyond your knowledge. But like Mark is saying, this knowing, this knowledge allows you to take in the greater mysteries of the universe and to reach out to the higher values of the galaxy and realize what your full potential really is, which I'm afraid, Earth Explorers, is unlimited.
Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid. Just let's do what is best for all rather than for selfish reasons to attain something merely for self-gratification. That's been the kind of the trick of the thing is when you do it for when you have a concept, when you have something that will benefit, it will benefit you, but it will benefit all folks, then that is more likely to be made manifest than, or just manifest because made isn't necessary, then should it be just simply for you. And usually if you get exactly what you want, it's not exactly what you thought it was going to be. Anyway.
Well, it's kind of like working on the sandcastle on the beach, you know. You go out there with your little shovel and your little get in your little cup that you, and if you've ever tried this, you should try it. You grab some of the real soupy wet sand and you take the cup and you can just dribble it on top of things and make really, really neat effects. Try it sometime. Anyway, you can get lost in it for hours. And if you don't watch yourself, you get a severe sunburn and you get sand in your crotch. But the idea is that you never really finish with the sandcastle. In fact, when you're done with the sandcastle, you don't stand there and look at it. You wait for the waves to take it, or you jump on it, or you walk away from it. Because that wasn't the goal at all, to finish the sandcastle. The goal was to build the sandcastle.
That's right. and find the stillness in the building of it. As you said, get lost in it, which is actually a meditative state, which is accessing your higher being within.
Hey, but, 5-year-olds get it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do.
And you know, when I think of like what you said early, to be childlike, that is it. It isn't to be childish.
No.
It's to be childlike. And you ever watch a child really appreciate a flower or really, really appreciate a dog or a hummingbird outside the window? Now, you watch those eyes go bright and the imagination and the wonder of that little 1-year-old or 2-year-old that's just like unbelievably interested in what's going on. I would venture to say most of the people you will see when you go to work, on the way to work tomorrow, commuting, sitting there by themselves in their car, not even talking on the cell phone, are not in wonder about anything.
Mm-hmm. They're not really present, because they'll be thinking about where they're going, the work they have to do, today, whether the kids have to be dropped off and picked up, and they're not present, even though they're automatons driving. And they don't even, the most of them, if you went and asked them, and when they get to work, how was your drive in, they will say, I don't remember driving in, because they weren't there. They were, like I said, at work, worrying about what was coming up, what doctor's appointments, all the kids have been having the sniffles, I wonder if it has the flu, blah, blah, blah. All these different things that the mind catches you up in, but they're not present. They're not, I mean, they're physically present, but the mind isn't there. The mind is in all those things that we crowd it with, that really until the moment when we have to take the child to the doctor, or when we get to work and find out what we need to do, we don't even know. We're just speculating. We're creating a little world that isn't there until the moment when it needs to be addressed. And I speak from experience. I used to have to drive 30 minutes to the east side of the mountains from work, and I'd get back, and I'd not even remember most of the trip.
And so, yeah. I've done that myself, just all of a sudden wake up and go, oh, this is my exit.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, you stayed between the lines. If any cars came near you, you would be fine, because your brain would react, as it should. But you're not present. You are wherever you were, whether it's listening to a radio program or thinking about what happened already, and all the things you could have changed it, how you screwed up, because most of us do think that way, and just go over our day and judge ourselves. And if you're in the moment now, boy, you did a great job, because here you are.
Well, the frustrating thing is that when you become aware and you become awake and you reach this ascension and you come back to Earth as a whole being, aware of the past, the present, and all the potential potentialities, the futures ahead of you, it can become a little confusing, in the sense that you're still dealing with people who are asleep. You're dealing with people who are loaded down with their paranoias and their suspicions and their personal feelings, which Lord knows you don't want to hurt, and their limited vision. And so you try to share a little bit of that vision with them, or expose them to some version of the future, and they get scared. And they start to clam up, and they start to recoil, and they start to have an allergic reaction. And try as you might, you cannot drag them forward. They will stay in their paranoia and their fear. And I don't really know how to resolve that, because as these two Earths, the one that vibrates at a higher frequency, the one that vibrates at a lower frequency, begin to go out of phase with one another, out of sync with one another, sort of like a dissonant notes on the piano, they will not be able to survive together very long. They will come apart. And I'm afraid, not afraid, I'm convinced that the beings that resonate with that higher frequency will move with that higher frequency, and the beings that resonate with the lower frequency as well. And what will happen is not only will the Earths separate, but the consciousnesses, the beings will separate as well. And you will find yourself not working with, not loving with, not residing with those who do not resonate at that frequency. You just will stop knowing each other.
I agree with that, and I'm going to add something to that. It's each individual's choice by free will to make whether they wish to go with a higher frequency, that of, to me, love, compassion, understanding, knowing, or stay in a lower frequency of fear, anger, greed, resentment. These are the lower vibrations. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying higher is good. It's different. And it's a choice that each of us make. Every moment we choose whether we want to, how we want to experience this life. And if someone is afraid and in fear, and there's nothing someone who isn't in fear and afraid can do about it, it's not that person's responsibility anymore. All they can say is, I love you. You have no need to be afraid. Or you can explain your fear to me and get it out of your system. But it's not the responsibility of, it's that person's responsibility to come out of their own fear and recognize it for what it is. I have compassion for all beings. But I also understand that I am responsible for my beingness. And I try my best to be a happy person. and it's not even try, because if you say try, you can fail. So I am a happy person and love. And
I could take that to one more layer, and that is, you know, this is a self-judging system in the sense that when you're in the higher frequency, you are automatically resonating with those things that are of higher frequency, and it is a self-immediately judging system. That being said, Mark is exactly right. You have your choice. Even if you are a higher vibrational being, you can choose to serve in the lower realms. Hence, Allah, ergo, Jesus, Buddha, Confucius, Krishna, other leaders that we have seen that obviously weren't from here, didn't resonate with anything on this planet, and yet came here to teach others. And I strongly suspect, that like Mark, there are several higher beings, thousands of them, maybe even hundreds of thousands of them, out there who are not from here, who did not need to come here for any part of their life development or their eternal growth pattern. In fact, they came here at great peril to their sovereignty and to their progression, in the sense that they could be tempted to fall into the fleshly carnality of this world. But they, most of them, do not. They rise above it. They are nonviolent. They do not manipulate. They do not hurt. They do not harm. They teach, they grow, they heal. And that is their level of concentration. It doesn't matter if they're an engineer or a farmer. Meeting them changes your life.
Well, there are many, 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 many volunteers here now, doing just as Brooke says. I've met many. Brooks has met many. And you can feel it. And you know it. Sometimes you just say, gosh, I like that person.
Well,
gosh, I'm always, you know, I always get a smile when I'm around that person.
I'm not really as likable as Mark is. Mark's a lot more likable than I am.
Oh, stop doubting yourself there, mister. You're plenty likable. You elicit smiles also with your wisdom and what you, the knowledge you've accumulated in this lifetime and the experiences you've had. You bring knowledge and understanding to folks, especially with your program. And I thank you for that, for me. And I think I thank you for your listeners also, because you do a wonderful, wonderful job in bringing so many subjects to light.
I appreciate it. It is the month for Thanksgiving, and also thanks receiving, and I receive it well. Thank you. Thank you so much, my friend.
Of course, and I'll get off. You probably have another caller or two waiting to come on, wanting to talk about good stuff and science and stuff. And you know, I'm not a science guy, but I do. I mean, it doesn't mean I dismiss science. By the way, there are some things that you can't get around no matter what. But all I have to say is, since I saw Brooks in July at the World Science Spirit and World Transformation Conference. And since that time, I've gone through other changes and met so many people, and the people that I've met through synchronicities that, and which means you could say coincidence, but there's so many coincidences that have to come together for me to meet these people. It's unbelievable, and all I can say is, don't believe the news. It's 2 hours or 1 hour of a 24-hour day, and it's all the world's worst news that they can find to tell you. And look at your life, and look at what you're doing. Don't look at the negative aspects. Look at your positive. Find all the things you're thankful for, because this is your true life. All those things that you can be thankful for. And every time you're thankful for it, guess what? You get another one. And another one, and another one. So create beautiful lives for yourselves, because I have met folks and beings, and one of the beings that I've come into contact with is Archangel Zadkiel. And Archangel Zadkiel sends a message.
Strong stuff, Mark. Take a breath. Take a breath. You're there.
Joy is your birthright.
I agree with that.
Simple as that. And if it does not bring you joy, why are you doing it?
That's right. Have fun, people, in what you do. And if you're vomiting in the parking lot as you go to work, change your life.
Yeah. And do it not because anyone tells you, but because you want to. That's the thing, because it'll bring you joy to change the direction you're going because you choose to. Simple as that, as I said earlier, and as has been stated, it is always your choice to make. It's your responsibility because you have that choice. But it's not a burdensome responsibility. It really isn't. If you live truthfully and to your truth, and who you are within, you'll experience the wonder again of life, because you had that before you were taught to not be yourself.
Well, there you go. You're going to have enough people lie to you in your lives. Don't lie to yourself.
There you go. All right, my friend. Much love to you and to your lovely wife and your children. And
thank you. Thank you. Thank you, Mark.
And Mariah was listening, and she sends her love also.
Ah, that's great. Mariah, the wind, the wonderful, beautiful eyes of Mariah. All right, my friend, have a good evening. Have a great week.
You too. I'll talk to you not too far in the future. my friend. You take care now.
Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, Earth Explorers. Phone lines are still open, toll-free 888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. And if you don't have access to toll-free, if you're in China tonight, I've had one call from China, but it came in on another line. Try back on this line, 530-776-5154. And you listeners in Australia, it's in the morning there. Go ahead, 530-776-5154. We'll give you top priority, and you can come on in. X Squared Radio is one of the highest-rated morning programs in Wales. They listen to the archive, they rebroadcast, and we get a lot of book orders from Wales. By book orders, I mean The Ark of Millions of Years. There is a trilogy out there on 2012. They are heralded by several universities to be the consummate work on the end times and the origin and destination of the Earth. They are nonfiction. They make up about 1,500 pages in all, and lots and lots and lots and lots of pictures. Volume 3 has over 189 pictures in it. And you can get your copy by going to arkofmillionsofyears.com. That's A-R-K, like Noah's Ark, arkofmillionsofyears.com. Google it if you can't remember the website. There is a special on from now until the end of the year. You buy all three volumes. Not only will you get packaged shipping, but you will get the first two volumes in audio. We will send those to you in the PayPal purchased experience as downloads chapter by chapter. And so if you're not a great reader, don't worry about it. I read them for you. You can listen to the first two books, keep them nice and pristine on your bookcase as a conversation piece, and then read the third volume. And you'll have a great experience. arkofmillionsofyears.com. Great, great, great package for Christmas. Don't pass it up. We have a caller on line one, Haya from BC. Welcome to the program.
Hello, Brooks. How are you?
I am doing wonderful now that you're here.
Well, last time I talked to you was at the at James's place this July, and I heard that Mark was on, and hello, Mark. Thank you for the poncho. It was beautiful. Yes, since that beautiful experiment we did out in the field, I just had some remarkable healing. It's just incredible. Since we did the Life Stream Machine, and then after the UFO, all four of them came over, which you first thought was a sunlight, but it wasn't. But anyway, yeah, I've just had some remarkable things happening.
Satellites don't turn in the sky, so...
I know. So, yes, I've had some wonderful things happen. And when I got back, I've been connecting with a lot of people. I've been keeping in contact with Nahi in Hawaii. And it's just, I've had some wonderful experiences. And I've also started a new technique of energy healing, of long-distance healing, called Tong Ren.
Really? Describe that for me.
Well, Tong Ren was actually developed by a gentleman called Tom Tan. And he came from China to the States in, I think it was 1977, and opened up a therapeutic center working with not only Tai Chi, but he's an acupuncturist. And during one of his sessions of Tai Chi, one of his students apparently fell or had a problem, couldn't move, and he didn't have any clean pins, you know, for his acupuncture, so he drew a picture and then put the pin on the picture, and it actually, with the intention of trying to heal this person, the energy, he tapped into collective unconscious and was able to heal.
Really?
And it works.
Huh.
Because
now,
a woman that actually also is a Tong Ren practitioner, King, about a month and a half ago, I belong to the Questers of Victoria.
Right,
and
right.
Yes. We do a lot of dousing and other, you know, we leave our minds open for a lot of others, you know, information to come through. But we have different people that come down and demonstrate certain things. And this one woman came down and she demonstrated the energy and how it worked. And by golly, I had a bit of a sore knee. I left with a very good knee.
Wow.
So a lot is happening. A lot is, I've done a lot of healing.
Now,
especially
I really
this year, this July.
You know, a personal interface, shall I say, with those kinds of energies. The idea that energy interfaces with the human body is not new, but it is new to Western cultures that the body that you were handed in your genetic package is not the body that you need, that you're required to keep. As the DNA is working away every minute of every day, replacing the cells of your body, it is the environment that influences the genetic makeup or the genetic production of the proteins that make up your human body, ergo illness and health. So, you know, part of that environment is your consciousness, and part of that environment is the consciousness of others around you, and that's what Haya is very openly describing here, that there are those who have really honed this ability, and they're able to antenna this energy into other people who are receptive to it. And I'm not really familiar with acupuncture other than I've seen it on TV, and I know my good friend Dr. Nick Begich uses a sort of electronic version of acupuncture. He has one unit that feels over the various portions of the body, the hands, the elbows, knees, things like that, and finds that low resistance point. And then that very same equipment can actually put an electrical pulse gently back into that low resistance point, thus accessing the energy body with precisely the frequency of energy that it requires. And the body's environment changes, and thus your genetic makeup begins to change.
Yes, yes. I think what's happening, I think this is what this whole 2012 is all about, to be really truthful. I think we're in a process of metamorphosis. I think what people refer to and have referred to in the past is junk DNA is not junk DNA at all. I think it's here within each of us, and as the frequencies within the universe start changing and the energies, which is a chi energy, you know, all through the universe, I think what happens is that we start changing ourselves. I think if we are allowed to, as we leave our mind open and our hearts open, I think what happens is there's a change that occurs and everything changes. So right now, we will be a completely changed type of human being. And I guess there'll be some people who just block the attempts of the natural changes, and I guess they just won't be able to, they'll stay, as you say, within the old earth or...
Yeah, I see that. So help me, if you want to, can you
mm-hmm.
describe the change in you before you learned that these energies were out there and that you could access them and influence them, and then now, after you've gained that skill, learned to meditate, learned how to recognize when those energies are present and to resonate with them, and even to put out your own energy and create a building resonance over time. How has that changed? How's that change affected you?
Well, I think how it's affected me is I've become more I'm more self-confident. I was before, but I seem to be more, and I certainly lack fear in worrying about. You know, people always worry about, well, what if this happens or what if that happens? I say, don't worry about that. Just, you'll deal with it when it happens. You know, you just have to do the right things now, not tomorrow, not the next day, not 3 weeks later. You know, the whole point is, you know, do the right thing at the time, you know, each minute of the day. So, you know, and when people start paying this type of thing forward, it's just amazing what starts happening.
Sure. Sure.
I feel that I can talk. And I've never been a shy person, but I feel I can talk to anybody and anyone. I don't have fear being on my own. I don't seem to have, you know, I get impatient. I get frustrated with people because I have a tendency to think way outside the box, and a lot of people are pretty conventional than they think.
Yeah, I'm so far outside the box that I don't even know what the box looks like anymore.
I know what you mean.
You mentioned the live stream. We had this like 6 foot, 4 million volt live stream generator.
Yeah, I was the first one in line, Brooks.
That was just amazing. So, you know,
we had
200 people hooked to that.
It was incredible. I've never experienced something quite like it. And quite truthfully, I had just come out of surgery about 6 months prior to that, and the healing that occurred so quickly and so completely was just unbelievable. And it's just little tiny things that you notice that you've had, you know.
Oh, I think we may have lost the call. I hate when that happens. Let Haya call right back if her phone dropped. We'll wait just a moment and have her come back, because she was describing her personal experience with the live stream generator. I'll explain to you what the live stream generator is once she comes back on the line, waiting for Haya to call back in. This was, it's actually turning into almost an annual event at the Earth Transformation Conference in Trout Lake, Washington. If you want more information on that, you can go to eceti.org. That's E-C-E-T-I, eceti.org, and get signed up for the event this coming July. They have small events up there, a training on Kunlun and sky watching and all kinds of things year-round up there at James Gilliland's place. He has a radio program on at 8 o'clock Pacific time every Saturday night, As You Wish Radio, on this very same network. And I highly recommend, if you have not been up there, and you probably have not seen a UFO on your own, that's the place to go. So now we have Haya back on the line. And welcome back, and maybe you can finish your story. You were talking about your contact with the live stream generator.
Oh, it was just remarkable. Something has changed definitely with me. You know, I can sense it. It's something you can't touch, or it's something within each person that you know that's changed. And I feel incredible change, and it's like there's things that are all of a sudden. It was like a combination between a live streams generator and having the UFO right over. Something happened so extraordinary that it's something like you can't tell, you can't show anybody, because it's your experience. You wish it could be their experience at the same time, but it isn't. But it's not a concrete thing, but it's just a knowing. It's just a knowing you've just received knowledge.
You know, we like to call that almost that thing the joy generator, because it creates such a euphoric feeling, and it has documented neurological effects that are quite incredible, especially with dramatic reductions in tremors for Parkinson's and more cognizance for Alzheimer's. But for people who are, you know, just doing it for the energy experience, it is really quite something. And if you want to know more about
it, it's really hard to explain, isn't it? Because you have to experience it.
Well, we have like 250 people all holding hands connected to this live stream generator. And I understand after talking to some of the people at the end of the line that they really couldn't feel anything through their hands, but in about five minutes,
they sensed something, didn't they, in the heart?
Yeah, the whole crowd really started laughing and started having the best time. It was really something to watch.
Well, I could have gone on all night with that machine. It was just incredible. It was the energy. It was like touched by God, if you want to put it that way. And how else can you explain it?
Yeah. Well, I understand what you mean, and that's I've been around that unit now for close to 3 years, and I've helped build quite a few of them, and I've experienced a lot of them. I can tell you from experience, regular use of that machine will have age reversal effects. It's really quite.
I think it starts the first time. Because what it does, I think it really opens you up. Starts off with, you know, right through the heart chakra when you think about it.
Yeah, it very well could.
Right through the heart chakra.
That's what I feel.
It's just amazing.
It
just opens everybody up completely.
Right. Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We have about 4 minutes left in this hour. What have you got going on this winter? Are you going to any conferences? Are there events going on up there in BC with respect to this special training and acupuncture?
Well, right now I'm starting the Tong Ren. I have a teacher that I'm working with. It's a very simple type of work to do. It has a lot to do, like, with rhythmic tarot intention.
Mm-hmm.
Intention also taps into the creative unconscious, the universal unconscious, if you want to put it that way.
Is that like dark matter and dark energy? It's sort of off-grid battery of the universe.
Yeah, and I've been doing a lot since the last time I was at the ranch. I started some more photography that I showed Michal, and I hear that he's coming to Victoria in May with another group, so I'll be going to see him.
Yeah.
And
I
hear right now James is
in
Hawaii. I think he's doing a Kunlun class out there.
That's really amazing stuff.
Yeah. And Kunlun is just wonderful. I picked up the book, and I've started that as well. But
I understand, and I've only participated in one class, but it was really really eye-opening. It is a way of connecting the energy body and the breathing with a higher consciousness experience. It's quite something. It's a way of breathing, holding your hands, posturing your body, tuning your mind, and it can create anything. Well, I'll put it this way: it was a range from higher awareness to a deep alpha state to even kundalini experiences.
Well, I know that I took all the classes. I was up at James for probably just a little over a week because I came in first and more or less left last. And I sat through pretty much all Rich's Kunlun classes, which I just found phenomenal. What I saw there was incredible. I've never seen people react this way. It was just incredible. It just blew your mind when you start, it's so powerful. And then when I got back and I started searching some more, all of a sudden it's like when you start opening up and you're looking for the energy, it just comes your way. And all of a sudden, the Tong Ren came my way because I wanted to find a new way to open up and to look at and to understand and to know. And the more I look into every avenue, the more and more you realize that we're so much energy beings.
Sure. And the hands and the mind and the heart have so much energy that you can transmit to another being. When you learn how to do that, especially with the live stream accenting that, it is really quite something to watch.
Incredible. I'll never forget the experience. And being at the first of the line, I just, as I said, it just felt like God touched me. That's the only way I could explain it, it's like...
Yeah, that's actually what it felt like. It was not that I would know what it was like if God touched me, but in the sense that we are all a piece and a part of God, it was.
God's energy on a very high plane. Person, it's an energy, right? And that's what went through us, energy.
Right, exactly right. We call it an energy experience.
Yeah.
All right, Haya, thank you so much for the call, and please, please call back many times. We love to hear from you.
Oh, I will. Okay, and have a lovely evening, Brooks.
Thank you.
And Mark out there, thank you again.
He's
take care. Have a good night.
Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you want to know more about the live stream generator, don't hesitate to go to zeropointresearch.com. Zeropointresearch.com, our good friend John Riley down there in Santa Monica. And we will be back in about 4 minutes, 30 seconds. Don't go away. More X Squared Radio coming after this brief musical interlude. Squared Radio comes to you live each Sunday evening from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific. And I'm your host, Brooks Agnew, and tonight we have open lines. This is the third and final hour of X Squared Radio, and it's a three-hour program, so if you're not getting all 3 hours, please let us know, and we'll get a hold of that affiliate and make them carry all 3 hours. You are the most important component of X Squared Radio. It is you that we're thankful for this season of Thanksgiving. Be thankful for who you are. Realize that you are Source. You are sovereign, wonderful components in a universe full of knowledge and energy and love, challenge, scarcity and abundance, and you're responsible for your reality. Welcome back to X Squared Radio. Remember, as you prepare for the holidays, the value of life and the value of each and every one of those little and large and old and well-seasoned souls with whom you come in contact. Realize that even if 2012 is as smooth as Y2K was, each moment is so valuable. Please don't squander it. Realize that it's so important. And we will talk about the rest of our subject matter tonight, 2012, the film. Did you see it? How did you feel when you saw it? Give me a review. Let me know what's going on. We'll be back in 40 seconds with more X Squared Radio, third and final hour coming up. We want you to be part of the program tonight. Toll free 888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. If you don't have toll free service, China, Australia, UK, or if you've got free nights and weekends on that phone, 530-776-5154. 530-776-5154. You are the star tonight. You are the guest tonight. We are nearing the season of Thanksgiving, and we're talking about 2012, the movie. Another question for tonight as we come off of the creative forces knowledge, which Edgar Cayce said we would have this time, this season, at the end of this age. If a human is aware of full consciousness and the ability to communicate with the creative forces, that denotes that there is a two-way exchange of knowledge. And this is not a description of some kind of recording playing out in space somewhere, and we just happen to be able to tune into the right frequency and we get it. We are describing an exchange of information. The human sends out his thoughts or her thoughts, feelings, fears, and loves out into the creative forces. And they send back the results of that exchange, sort of like a thought processor, receiving and digesting the message and then reflecting out the result of that input, your input. But also, the creative forces now have a new toolbox from which to draw. That toolbox is you. Now, you can go through life unconscious like a baseball bat swinging in a china shop, and you can certainly affect the universe. You can certainly make another mess of things, as Stan Laurel would say. On the other hand, there are those of us that go through life thinking that we are a tree, a great plant growing out, branches going in every direction, any direction that we wish to go, and all of a sudden a giant pair of pruning shears comes in and whacks off a limb, and you hear a voice, "I am the gardener here." Some things seem to come into our lives from out of nowhere and make powerful changes in our lives. Some people think that life is about 30% our own choice and 70% destiny. That is to say, we have some control over who we are, where we go, and what we become, but most of it is made up for us. Some people believe that's about 50-50. Yeah, we can do what we want to do and do what we design to do about 50% of the time. And the rest of the time, the universe just hands us a rash of, well, you know what. But there are those of us who believe that life and its condition is 100% our design. We bring upon ourselves those things that happen to us by our actions, not our parents' actions, not even the actions of our children, our actions. Now, yes, where you are raised, you could make the argument I was raised in a Airstream trailer in the middle of Northridge, California. I didn't have much of a chance at becoming great. But you could go back before that and say, you know what? I chose to be born to those parents in that Airstream trailer in the middle of Northridge, California. I chose to start where I started because that is the challenge I wanted in my existence on the earth this time. To carry the question further, are we empowering the creative forces with the right energy for the race of mankind and for planet Earth? Or are we being selfish? Now, I don't mean self-centered. That's a completely different thing. To center upon oneself and to love oneself is actually a great place to start, because I can tell you right now, people, if you don't love yourself, not many other people will either. If you're waiting for someone to come along and love you because you do not, you'll be waiting a long time. And you might even attract the wrong kind of mate. You might attract the kind that take advantage of people who don't love themselves, because they don't love themselves either. I would say a great place to start your loving experience is yourself. Treat yourself to the best books. Treat yourself to the best bath oils. Treat yourself to a pedicure. Yeah, that's right, men. Take your boots off, roll your pant legs up, and have a pedicure. No, it is not feminine. It is one of the most marvelous changes in your relationship with your shoes you will ever have. Love yourself. Think in abundance. And that doesn't mean go out and buy a Maserati just because you like the lines of it. But it also means don't say to yourself, I don't deserve that new pair of jeans. I don't deserve to go to the movies. I don't deserve to have a great meal and savor it with a great glass of wine. Love yourself. And your level of thankfulness and your ability to set your ego aside and make business deals or meet mates and make friends will be greatly enhanced, because the one who walks through the valley of the shadow of death with the giant ego is the one who lives in fear. The one who walks through the valley of the shadow of death with a love for themselves and a satisfaction with their sovereignty and their being and knowing has no fear. And it has nothing to do with the size of the stick they wield as they walk through the valley. It's a great place to start. It can very effectively be argued that we are at least participants in the evolution of mankind, the earth, and perhaps even the universe. And so the questions that you need to ask before you drift into meditation, and by the way, I would suggest if you're not meditating, a pre-New Year's resolution. I'm going to find a comfortable chair in my house, even if it's the end of the couch or even if it's the love seat. And I'm going to learn to position myself on this couch, and I'm going to learn what mudras are. Those are the connections of your fingers during various breathing exercises. I am going to learn to meditate this year. And during that meditation, it can be argued, and it has been said by some teachers out there, that the thing to do is to quiet the mind, empty the mind, become nothing, try to go as blank as you possibly can. And it's an effective argument. I've heard it myself. But I think it works better if you find a place, a launch pad, as it were. I don't care if it's a cave or a meadow or a patio or a mountain or a tree or a cloud that you close your eyes and go to. As long as that great wilderness, that place of solitude is in your heart. Yes, I don't mean the imaginary heart. I mean, close your eyes, slide down your trachea, make a left-hand turn with respect to your spine, and get in your heart. Feel what it is like to be there at that engine of life inside your body. And then, after the quiet mind is reached, and I do mean in just a very, very few minutes, one or two, begin to reach out. Grab that place, that launching place. Stay as long as you like. Remember your breathing. And then go out. Find the answers you are looking for. Build that machine. Draw that map. Figure out that problem. Understand the mathematics that you're struggling with for your nursing classes. Understand the relationship of the politics and the history that you're wrestling with that graduate program. And then reach out, way out, and you will find a plethora of pure knowledge that will flow into you. Now, for me, it took Mount Adams. For you, it might just be as simple as the sofa in the middle of St. Louis. It is different for every person. There is a portal there for everyone. And I would say that you are where you are because you have designed to be near that portal which works for you. I don't care if it's the basement or a studio apartment or a flat or the basement of your parents' home. You can find that place. And when you reach that source of knowledge, realize that it was stored there just for you. And when you reboot your body and you reboot your consciousness out of meditation, you're going to find that you recovered a lot of that stuff you left behind the last time. Don't you think it would be neat to find the toolbox you had the last time around? Whether you were mortal or whether you were in another form? Most religions teach that we were in another form before we came here. Wouldn't it be nice to tap into that toolbox and bring it forward? Now, you have this participating event, and I want to ask yourself two questions. Ask yourself, what are we doing? And you might want to rate yourself. Just look at the news for 5 minutes, no more than that, please. Or you might want to wander out into the woods and ask this question. How are we doing? How are we doing? How am I doing? How are we doing as a race, as a family, as a community? And then re-ask yourself that question. What are we doing? What are we being? And you're going to get some amazing answers. I want to hear yours. Toll free, 888-228-4494. 888-228-4494. And if you've got free nights and weekends on that cell phone, or you don't have access to toll free service, the number is 530-776-5154. We're in the final hour of X Squared Radio, and this is where we encourage you to have your seatbelts firmly fastened, your tray table in its upright and locked position, and make sure that you recline the seat and then look out the window. Because we go places in this third hour. Some people don't play by the rules. They don't listen to the show, to the program from the beginning. No. They load up the third hour and listen to it by itself. But I can tell you, that's a little bit like sucking down a chocolate milkshake all at once. You're going to get a brain freeze. I recommend listening to all 3 hours. We start out, we lay a good foundation, we ask some good questions. We have great guests on this program on an almost weekly basis. Tonight, you are the guest. You are the important one that I'm trying to reach out to. There has been a movie that has been launched recently called 2012. It's out there. It's in theaters. They're expecting a heck of a weekend with this movie. Some of you have seen it. I want you to call back in and tell me how that movie affected you. Did it scare you? Did it entertain you? Did you laugh about it? Did you say, gee, I didn't know that? I want to know what effect living in the age that most great civilizations on this planet looked forward to. I don't know if they figured out how to make themselves live long enough, but they figured out how to make their imagination, their thoughts, their visions reach to this day. And they took them back with them, and they carved them in stone, and they built them in magnificent engineering feats that we're still scratching our head over. And they left a message for us. Be aware, December 21st, 2012 is an important date. We're trying to remind you to stay aware, stay awake. Keep your eyes open. Keep listening. Learn who you are and what effect you have on the universe. You know, there is a very common philosophy in physics that when we observe something, that something is changed. Not unlike Nicolas Cage in the movie Next, when he was narrating, the universe, the future changes just because you looked at it. But it is really changed when we affect it with purpose and try to drive it one way or the other. Yes, that's the key. Observation is sort of the accidental looking. Oops, I saw you with your fill in the blank. And thus you have affected it. But if you're going to do more than affect, you're going to say, okay, I'm going to go to the future and I'm going to put a design out there. I'm going to put a manifestation out there. I'm going to resonate with that with my intention. And so how does it make you feel that you are reaching the creative forces that we're talking about, Edgar Cayce predicting, with your intentions, whether you are conscious or not? How does it make you feel that you can reach out there and you can affect the creative forces with you, with your intention, with your design, with your manifestation? Now, when you consider that you are having this mighty effect, I mean moving mountains, just like Jesus said you could by yourself, imagine what you could do with two of you, concentrating on the same thing, focusing on the same end. Ergo, small business, focusing on the finished product. You know, there's an old joke about Kentuckians and Hoosiers. Those are folks that live on the other side of the Ohio River in Indiana. As the story goes, there was this family reunion picnic on the Kentucky side, and there was a Hoosier on the other side of the river mocking them. So four Kentuckians got in their canoe and paddled over the Ohio River to teach him a lesson. They followed the Hoosier over the hill and out of sight. About 10 minutes goes by with every drumstick on the Kentucky side halfway to the mouths of a riveted genealogical gaggle. Nothing but wind erasing the footprints of those who ran through the bluegrass over the hill on the other side of the river. So, out of curiosity and a sense of rescue, a flat-bottom boat with six Kentuckians heads over the river and over the hill they go to do battle. Again, barely a spoonful of potato salad was consumed for over 15 minutes in anticipation. Finally, a longboat with 10 Kentuckians paddle fiercely over the Ohio and begin up the grassy hillside when one of their brethren comes stumbling back over the hill, holding his ribs in agony. Go back! Go back, he cries. There's two of them. the moral of the story, there isn't one. I only wanted to point out what the power of two could do. Now, if you join your purpose with another and force your intention out into the universe, it must change. There are irrefutable laws of the universe that govern this. Now, it might change infinitesimally. That is to say, you might be throwing a pebble into the ocean and wondering how you're going to affect the waves of that day. Not much. But if two of you can do it, then 2,000 can do better. 2 million can do better. 2 billion could have an amazing effect on the universe. So when we're talking about the idea that a great cataclysm can come to the Earth, and certainly there's no small amount of computer-generated graphics in this movie 2012, because it's the same director that made the movie The Day After Tomorrow, and you saw that movie. I did. I saw it several times. I found it quite amusing. Great entertainment. And I think, even though the author, the director didn't admit it, I think it was based on the novel, the book by Whitley Strieber and Art Bell called The Coming Global Superstorm. I just think it fit the book very, very well. Edgar Cayce made another assertion with his prediction, which we read at the beginning of the first hour. He asserts that we would become aware of how to use that interaction with the creative forces for planetary effects. Does that mean that we learn how to plant trees and crops, or does it mean that we figure out how the universe was formed with CERN's super collider? Or does that mean that we figure out how to turn the seas from leaving their bounds, like you see in the movie 2012? I haven't seen it, but I have seen the previews. I'm asking the question now. If you've seen the movie 2012, give us a call, 888-228-4494, 888-228-4494. And if you don't have toll-free service, don't worry about it, 530-776-5154. Go ahead and give us a call. Tell us about the movie. Tell us if you had fun, if you were scared, if you're ready to go to Sam's Club and stock up on pinto beans and cornbread, or if you find that this is all just another Y2K hoax. I'm interested. Give us a call and let us know. And that is the question for this hour, I guess. If you had the ability to change anything in this world, what would it be? You know, we used to get this question, if money was no object, what car would you drive? It tells a lot about a person, you know, if money was no object. Why would it even be an object in our lives, I guess is my question. But seriously, if you had to change anything in this world right now, and you had the power to do it, what would it be? Let us know. 888-228-4494. 530-776-5154. And you could be so Sandra Bullock-ish about it, a la Miss Congeniality, and you could say, world peace. I want world peace. But you could also have a greater effect. If you had to change anything in this world and had the ability to do it, what would it be? Let's see here. 228-4494. I think that will do it. Yes, we'll send that number out to our Skype texter and see if we can get a call. We are talking about if you had the ability to change anything in this world, what would it be? Now, there are some ground rules to this. You have to respect the sovereignty of other beings. So you can't say, okay, I'm going to change this one thing, and by the way, that's going to inconvenience everybody else on the planet but me. Like, you can't say, I want the island of Hawaii all to myself, because that affects the sovereignty of other beings. You know, Jesus said that you could remove mountains by just saying, be thou removed, and it would remove itself. The problem with that is that you affect the lives of the people that have houses on that mountain. You affect the deer and the squirrels, the fish in the mountain stream, and the eagle that peruses its peaks. Just because you had a whim that you wanted the mountain to be removed. So, let's try not to do that. But, there are changes that you could make in the world. I think you could turn on the news. Please, only do it for a brief amount of period. We really don't need that negative resonation in your spirit this week. But if you turned on the news, it would take a very short amount of time and you would realize that somebody out there is in control of what we see every day. Bob from Arkansas in our first hour made the very effective argument that it appears someone is out there monkeying with the programming. It doesn't matter whether you have 13 channels or 1,300 channels. You're going to see vampires and things blowing up and soft porn, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on the TV. Somebody out there is monkeying with the programming. We are not seeing Andy of Mayberry type movies, films, and programs on TV. We're seeing something which has the appearance of being diabolical, of having some kind of theme. And that theme seems to be demoralizing and desensitizing our population. One of the things that people bring up from time to time is that we have two different mentalities going in our world. We have what's in it for me, and we have the Attila the Hun management principle. It is not enough to win. All others must lose. And I think you probably work for a boss like that. Anyway, we have Alex from Ranson, Missouri on line one. Welcome to the program, Alex.
Hey, Brooks. Long time no talk to you. I think it was 3 years ago I called you over at your place in Vail.
How was that? My goodness, we were all the way back in Vail, North Carolina when I met Alex. How have you been doing?
I've been doing great, actually, yeah.
Well, that's great. So have you got an answer to our question tonight? If you had the ability to change anything in this world, what would it be?
If I had anything, the ability to change anything in this world, I would probably change myself. Because with yourself originates all other change.
Wow, that's really powerful. I wasn't even thinking about that, but you're absolutely right. And it's probably the one thing you are most empowered to change.
Exactly. You know, the behavior that you don't like in other people, if you don't like it, you need to change it in yourself. Before expect them to, then it will, then you don't really have to tell them to, because it won't be anymore.
Well, I understand what you're saying. You know, one of the things that I hear people say from time to time is, I'm just stuck with who I am, you know, I don't have a good body, I'm overweight, or I don't have good teeth, or I have no hair, or I'm not smart like you. And they really, you know, don't give me much to work with, when I'm trying to communicate with them. What would you recommend? How would you encourage them, to say whether you're 8 or whether you are 80? that this is a great place to start, changing yourself.
The reason they think that is because they are at present with that particular image of themselves, and this freedom image themselves as a child of God. It's supposed to be making a God of themselves, and therefore to be striving for perfection in everything. They won't. They're not beating themselves up for not achieving it, because no one can achieve it during this life. I'm not saying it's totally impossible, but the only person who's ever actually achieved total perfection, I believe, is Jesus Christ. A lot of other people have come close, but of course, Jesus Christ is the role model of perfection, let me say.
Well, I think that's exactly right. There are role models of perfection out there. And really, when we're talking about perfection, we're really talking about completeness, are we not? We're not talking about he doesn't do anything wrong,
exactly.
He makes no mistakes. You know, even Jesus had enemies. But we are talking about the fulfillment of one's own potential.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of the things that I like about his teachings, or at least what's recorded as his teachings, is that he does not enslave the follower. What he does is he empowers the follower.
He doesn't limit anyone.
Right.
Exactly. He says, what I can do, you can do much more.
Yeah, it's not, at least with Jesus, when I'm reading his writings, and whether you're reading his writings or his ruminations or teachings in the Bible, or whether you're reading it in other sources that are extra-biblical, what you find is that Jesus isn't really establishing a religion. What he's doing is teaching the people mm-hmm. about themselves and their own potential. And this is completely independent of the genealogy that the Sadducees and Pharisees thought was the most important thing in the church.
Mm-hmm. It was this morning, priesthood meeting, of course, we were talking about, one of the lessons on Joseph Smith himself, from the Joseph Smith book, of course. And we were talking about, it was really good, and it's totally applicable with what you're saying right now. I totally forgot,
Well,
but anyway.
The thing about Joseph Smith, as he was struggling as an American prophet, and the interesting thing about Joseph Smith is he started very young. Actually, he was not quite 15 years old when he had his first vision. And somehow he was able to convince his family that he actually had the vision, and they supported him. And a short while later was introduced into, to a being who had previously lived on the earth and had returned as an angelic being to teach him a long series of very important lessons, and he did so over four repetitions of this lesson so that Joseph Smith actually had memorized every portion of it, and also showed him where he had buried a gold record when he was alive on the earth. So the interesting thing about this is very much like Genesis in the Bible. By the time you finish the book of Genesis, you have been introduced to five races of beings, none of whom are from this world. And so you have a young prophet who brings back the idea that, I'm not going to call them extraterrestrials, because that's just not the nature of the contact, but shall I say non-mortal beings can bring back important information to certain individuals at certain times, and very consistent with the writings, not only in the Bible, but in other books as well, other ancient books. This knowledge comes to humble farm boys who are uncorrupted by the sophisticatedness of the city or complexities of various religions. In fact, Joseph Smith records in his own writing that he was somewhat confused by the religious teachings of the day, and there was some kind of religious revival, no small amount of it going on there in New York. In fact, if you go to Palmyra, there are four huge churches on the four corners of the same intersection, just to give you an idea how confusing a little town can be. And out of this came an extremely awake being, a mature, very incredibly charismatic Joseph Smith, who had knowledge beyond the ability of any of his contemporaries. Many of the prophets and apostles.
I just remembered.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. I went in the class that the way Joseph Smith taught the gospel wasn't a here's the knowledge you believe it type of way. It was here's the knowledge. You live it, then experience what it does to you, then you can believe it. After the belief leads to living, then the living leads to much. So basically, as he taught the gospel, it was not to believe, it was to eventual become knowledge through experience facilitated by belief.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Anyway, that's the same with Jesus Christ. He wants to experience so that he didn't want us just to memorize his gospel and believe it. He wanted us to work on that belief so it became a knowledge. And that's basically the next, what I called the life process of progression. It's the way
if you go through your whole life, just living on faith and never building knowledge of any of the concepts that you're being faithful in, then you're probably being disingenuous to whatever religious tradition to which you adhere. And that's one of the remarkable things about teachers like Joseph Smith, is he would give you the knowledge and then he would say, now you can sit there and believe it and do nothing, or you can live it. You can bring it into your life, make it a knowledge, stand on it, gain what he called a testimony of it, and what will happen is your life and your being and your person will begin to change. Now, you could either fall into that tradition thinking that going to church every Sunday and wearing the right clothes and saying the right words and holding your body in the right way and holding your hands in the right way is going to gain you salvation. That isn't it at all. What it is the progression of the being itself and learning how your, and we're just going to use a more generic term here, how your consciousness drives the flow of knowledge from other realms to you. In the Book of Mormon, in First Nephi, Nephi and his family, his father Lehi and his mother Sarai and brothers Samuel and Laman and Lemuel all escape Jerusalem before it's destroyed in 600 BC. And they don't escape with much. Just even though they're merchants, they escape with their tents and a few supplies and basically the clothes on their back. But they wake up one morning, and in front of their tent is a remarkable, curious little brass ball called a liahona.
The first key to existence.
Right. It appears to be what they call a instrument of curious workmanship. And here's what's interesting about it. Not only does it have needles on it that tell you which way to go, somewhat like a compass, but it also has a little, like a readout screen on it, and it tells you not only which direction you should go to find food, but how to build things and how to work unknown situations. But the remarkable thing is, it runs on consciousness. So when your consciousness is aligned with higher energy, it functions. And when you drop into jealousy and greed and anger, it quits. It only runs on the higher frequencies that are generated by a being that is in tune with the spirit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's pretty remarkable instrument.
Many people have a false conception of what the spirit actually is. They think it's pure energy based. And what it actually is, it's a more refined material. It still matters. It's a more refined higher frequency matter, I should say.
That goes along with what we wrote in our books, that the earth is made up of two types of matter, spirit matter and temporal matter, and even bodies are made up of that.
Right.
So have you seen the movie 2012?
Have I seen the movie? No, but I do want to. I saw the behind the scenes for the super volcano sequence, the one that Caldera exploded. That was absolutely amazing.
Well, I hope the area around Salt Lake City is safe. You know, I visit Salt Lake City a lot. I have partners there and I have friends there. And it is a very protected area. It's surrounded by mountains all the way around and absolutely gorgeous. If you go up a little Cottonwood Canyon and just look at the snow and the mountains, the rest of the world just melts away. It's an amazing, magical place.
Yeah. You know, when I've, between my, studies of opinion about 2012 and also biblical prophecy. I figure it's you're going to get explosions of perhaps the Yellowstone caldera or huge earthquakes. I was listening to BYU radio again, and it's a discussion that a few of the faculty staffing Department of Ancient Scripture had, and they said one thing we miss as far as Book of Revelations, the book of, the book of Ezekiel, it wasn't written to show all the mysteries. It was written for, as far as what we could, it was basically a to change people, to tell where they were inevitably going to go, track they were inevitably
sure.
going to follow.
That's probably one of the most satisfying
anyway.
Things is to watch that when they're introduced to the higher energy, or they're introduced to the idea, the reality that they can actually raise themselves to almost godlike vibrations. To watch that change in someone is the most amazing thing.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I just forgot what I was going to say. You were talking about earlier.
Well, Alex, I realize that, you know, for Earth Explorers out there listening to X Squared Radio, I got to let you know that Alex and I have been friends for many years, and he very often, almost on a daily basis, writes me, and he has great insight into a lot of the things that we talk about on this program, and I want you to know that I appreciate him from the bottom of my heart. And it is a challenge for some people to come on the air and try to speak to people all over the world. And I just, for one, want to let you know I really, really appreciate you calling in. I know it takes a lot, and I will. Listen to anything you have to say.
It's just every once in a while I'll lose a thought that I was having, and it happens whether I'm on the phone with someone or otherwise, you know. Just one of those things.
I understand. We both have great respect for the young American prophet Joseph Smith. For those of you that haven't read about his life, or have been at least, I'm going to say, prejudiced by somebody afraid of the Mormon Empire or whatever, and afraid to learn about him or read the Book of Mormon, I challenge you to open your minds and open your thought processes and your ability to understand the real-time involvement of higher beings with this planet, and the fact that some of them come here as visitors, like gods, like angels, like resurrected beings, like translated beings, and some of them are born here. They come here and they grow up as babies and young boys and young women, and they realize who they are somewhere in their adolescence. They realize that they are actually quite ancient beings that have stepped into a mortal experience in a young body, trying to convince a doubting, wayward, fearful, jealous world locked into scarcity and jealousy and post-war stress, trying to convince them that you are who you are and that you have the potential to bring them great knowledge, heal them, and teach them to heal one another, and teach them to rise above the carnality of this world that this flesh seems to help us drop into so easily. You will not only lose despair, but you will gain great joy in your existence here, no matter what your circumstances, and you will learn that you are empowered to fix them and to love yourself. And that's an important message.
You know what's really interesting that I've noticed as I studied traditions? We Westerners have resurrection, right? And Eastern traditions have what they call reincarnation. And interestingly enough, our Western culture sort of finds everything Eastern extremely tricky. Like, this is new stuff to us. And interestingly enough, the Eastern people find everything that we believe just as interesting.
Sure. And they believe things are in cycles.
Exactly. Anyway, what I all find absolutely stunning is that compared, actually, I've listened to scientists talk about quantum theory and that sort of thing, and I find that let me back up for a minute. The Westerners that are entrenched with religion use what they call past life to prove that reincarnation actually exists. I heard someone on the radio, actually I was on Coast State, used to listen to that religiously because if I have this job, I sit down and make maps all day, and that gets a little bit tedious, so I don't have something going on to keep your brain busy. And
well, it's a great time to listen to X-Squared Radio Archives. Alex, I hate to cut you off, but I am absolutely out of time, and I got to let the producer get the next program on.
I figure, yeah, we can continue this conversation on another old show or whatever. Thanks.
You're very welcome, yeah. Alex. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling in, and thank you for all the text messages that you send. It really helped me out. I appreciate it.
No problem.
Good night.
Thanks. Bye.
Goodbye. All right, Earth Explorers, that is it for X Squared Radio on November 15th, 2009. Remember to be thankful, be kind to one another, and we will see you next week. It has been a great pleasure to have you here with us this evening. Tell a friend about us, because every Sunday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern Time, we bring you the best 3 hours of exploration into the mysteries of the universe and of the Earth. If you're not getting all 3 hours, send us the call letters of your local station, and we'll do the rest. Remember, Earth Explorers, that you are Source. Everything we do will eventually affect the universe, so try to do it on purpose. Reach out for the good in people and help it to grow a little every day, and before long, you will have saved the planet. This is X Squared Radio, saying, peace, Earth Explorers.